Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. This week, title race? What title race? Have Kilmarnock killed off Rangers' trophy hopes because of Brophy? Probably. Elsewhere, Aberdeen have scored. In fact, they've scored four times since we last saw them. And as Storm Dennis wreaked havoc, Scott Pittman slid into more than just Gary Holt's DMs. And Jamie Hamilton's handling seeing red again. Plus, we're talking with Scotland's captain and ask who will stay longer in Europe, Scotland or Scottish football? I'm Andrew Slavin, and joining me in the studio is the one and only donut maker himself, JJ Bull from The Telegraph.
That is in, because no one will know what that's reference to. I got bored on Friday and made a video of me making donuts, and they were really good. I was surprised at myself.
I'm actually jealous. I'd quite like to make donuts. But also joining us from Coppa 90, it's the marksman, Finlay Marks.
Hello.
But you prefer Finn, don't you?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Is it just when you're in trouble, people call you Finlay?
Pretty much, yeah.
JJ, how were your donuts? You were actually really pleased by them, weren't you?
they were really good, yeah.
I actually watched it. I was impressed that you made more out of the dough balls. You didn't waste a thing.
Well, that's the thing. You can't waste the holes. They're important. That's what they refer to, isn't it, when you buy them? I don't know, like bits, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, it's on my Twitter if you want to learn how to make
I can
donuts.
Actually plug your Scotch pie one is actually better, I think.
They're just different, Andrew.
They are.
It's not always competition.
We've heard before your love of Scotch pies, and yeah. I have also brought Scotch pies down for you.
You did.
From Scotland, because I'm a nice guy. But anyway, enough about food. Let's talk about football. Thanks to the continual effects of the winter break, we've got a double game week to look back on. So to sum up what happened midweek, the title race may have ended after Kilmarnock made a killing after Eamon Brophy wolfed down an 88th minute winner, which seriously damages Rangers' title challenge. Celtic's 5-0 win over Hearts ensured the holders extended the gap at the top to 10 points. Elsewhere, the Foundry and Aberdeen were pouring the free pints after the Dons finally scored from open play in 2020 and beating Hamilton 3-1. And Motherwell 2-1 loss to St Johnstone meant Aberdeen moved up to third as well. Hibs and Livy were the other sides with wins midweek too. But what happened this weekend, we're about to find out.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
So guys, a Desmond was played out during Dennis at Tynecastle. Another way of putting it, Hearts and Hamilton drew 2-2 in the capital. Do you like that one?
You got to say 2-2, you can't say 2-2.
Yeah, I know, it's true.
I know what you're doing, but unfortunately you have absolutely shagged your joke.
Thanks very much. It's okay. I mean, cleverer people than I would have understood it. Clearly you did, and you have corrected me. Anyway. Hamilton was the undoing of Hamilton because Jamie picked up his third red card of the season for what was deemed to be a deliberate handball and allowing Hearts to get back into the game after Marius Ogbonpo had put Aki's 2-0 up. Hearts have Walker and Halkett to thank for their comeback though, don't they guys?
It was a really peculiar game because Hamilton, I couldn't believe how much space they had breaking forward, and then they got these two goals, even though Ogbonpo almost contrived to miss the first one that he had, which was going to roll to him, and he just kind of hit it goalward and it almost was saved. But I couldn't believe the space that they had in behind him, the Hearts defence. It was crazy. But you see, the sending off, which was, it was astonishing, right? I'm not the only one that just thought that was...
It was...
Even by the laws of the game.
Well, even by the laws of the game, what, he's adjudged to be the last man and a deliberate handball. So if it was deliberate, and the ball was going to go through to, I don't know who it was, and was it Liam Boyce?
I'll just tell you, I've got it here. It is Liam Boyce, yeah.
Yeah, so then it's the right decision. The referee looks like he's made the right call, but the thing is, we can see the other angles after the game, and it does look like Hamilton's not looking at the ball. So it seems harsh for it to be deemed as deliberate, right?
I know he's running away from the referee, but even just using your common sense, it doesn't...
That doesn't look like a
deliberate handball. It's so stupid. And also, I think other people were talking about like a clear and obvious goal scoring opportunity, but it wasn't. He was still miles outside the box.
So Hamilton have put an appeal in for this. Do you think it will be
reduced.
Yeah, I think so. And the reason, like, so the only thing I can think, I'm trying to give the referee a bit of a credit, the way he's running, because he's behind him when it's happening, it might look, it sort of looked like he puts his left arm up, he throws his arm up to connect it to keep the ball from rolling away from him. But when you see the same replay, clearly it's just it's bumped off, like it's part of his body and then onto his arm. It's not, it's never...
From the replay, to me it looked like, and I don't, I wasn't at Tynecastle, so I don't know if it was part of the play, but the weather was miserable across the country the whole weekend. And it looked like from the replay, I don't know if the wind had kind of, where he's tried to chest it or control it, and it's kind of pushed a little bit beyond, dropped onto his left arm, and then down onto the ground. That it just looked so
That's what Hearts are relying on now, an act of God to give them hope into this, into their relegation fears. Because let's focus on Hearts and let's focus on Stendel and his impact at the club so far. I think it's one win in 11 games, and that was over Rangers. And it seems now that back then when they'd beaten Rangers, everyone was thinking, right, this is the stepping stone, this is what Hearts have to replicate into their next coming games. They haven't managed to do that. Their points per game are now worse than what Craig Levein had.
I just, though. I mean, it's a tiny difference.
So are you confident that Stendel is making the right changes to Hearts at the moment?
I think it's good having Stendel in, right? So let's see if I can explain this in a way that sounds coherent. You could get any manager. So Craig Levein was playing something like a 4-5-1, like everyone always does, right? You play a 4-5-1, you sit at halfway, and you just... You work harder than the other team, and that's how you get points. And you play a 4-4-2, and you attack with the wingers, and you swing the ball in, and you, or the, like St. Johnstone in the weekend, the goal they score, Stevie Mays, was like an 80-yard punt as high in the air as it could possibly go. They win the second ball and they score from it. That's kind of the hope, and you'll go far in the Scottish Premiership doing that. Like you can sustain a career at two or three clubs doing that. Stendel's trying to bring in a style of play which is, to say it's modern, sounds a bit stupid, but it's basically the kind of thing that Liverpool are doing, what Leipzig are doing, all these sort of teams playing with a counter-press. You have to play a high line to do it. You press high to force people to clear the ball long so you can then win the ball back and go with it. You can show the ball where you want it, and then you should have numbers over to be able to attack. It's kind of new to players in Scotland. I think it's an entirely new philosophy. So you can't just rely on these players to know how to do it. That takes time. You need training needs to do that. You need players who can do it. So Stendel could have come in, and then you could argue that what they could have done was brought someone in a little bit like Levein, to maybe just a bit more proactive, more attacking, and try to give them some confidence in the players. Don't change anything too quickly, and then go from there. And then Stendel could start slowly implementing his stuff. But this might be his only chance to get this done. So I think it's good for him to go in and be like, right, we're doing this my way now. We're doing this, bang, bang, bang. Slash it all out and start from, you know, give yourself a good, like, point zero, so you can go from there and take it on. They were already in horrible form. They're bottom of the table. Like, they were already in terrible, terrible form. Players are all over the place. Clearly, dressing room unrest. The club's a bit of a mess, top to bottom. Levine's still there. Was he working from home or something like that? It's all over the place. And you can see that kind of on the pitch. And then if they don't get results, the players might start doubting what the manager said. I know we had David Priestson a while ago, and he said that's not really what happened. But it must be the case that the players now don't believe it.
But there was the unfortunate thing for Hearts fans is that there always seems to be that kind of grass kind of positiveness that seems to be just in reach. The signings of Liam Boyce, for one, the Jamie Walker coming back from injury again. These are good players. We've seen the good players and where they've came from. But trying to adapt to Stendel's style, and we're just not seeing the difference yet.
But you can't see the difference. You can see the difference on the pitch. Like, it's obvious. Like, the goals.
It's not becoming of results. You're not seeing results.
Yeah, but this is the thing with football. You can be the better team and still lose. It's the...
Were they the better?
But it's a lot of things. It's not just that the managers...
Against 10 men, JJ.
Yeah, but they came back from 2-0 down. They needed the 10 men for them to be able to get back in the game. It's just they're all over the place just now. You can see Stendel's looking at that going, what the hell are you doing? It looks to me as though they've spent all their time working on things in training. They go on the pitch and then they just forget it, which happens with players who aren't very good. And they have good individual players, but that does not make for a good team.
I think from my own viewpoint, is that this was a marker for Hearts to say, well, our closest rivals for relegation was Hamilton. Win this, and that really is, they've got to beat teams that are around them. They were 2-0 down after 20 minutes. That's shocking at home, and it's not good enough. And I think, you know, whatever Stendal may be trying to do at Hearts, I think it's obviously going to take more time, but how much time do they really have?
But what's the alternative?
Well, we don't have any more time to talk about Hearts or Hamilton, so we're going to talk about Kilmarnock and Hibs, because the race for third gets even more interesting after Hibs beat Kilmarnock at the weekend. The Edinburgh side now 5 points off that place, and it was Greg Docherty and Adam Jackson with the goals for Hibbies, ending Kelly's run of four unbeaten. The thing that really strikes me is they've really nailed their January transfer windows, because Greg Docherty had an absolutely brilliant game.
Newell plays it back onto Docherty, up against O'Donnell, cuts inside, shoots to shoot! What a wise decision from Greg Docherty, and a stunning goal.
The guy who was player of this season at Shrewsbury, and he really marked his first goal for the club spectacularly, Finn, didn't he?
Is this not a second goal? Did he not score in the Scottish Cup as
oh,
well?
Oh, sorry, his first goal in the league.
It's not a surprise. When he came through at Hamilton, he looked really good. I think when he went to Rangers as well, initially he looked very good, and he's looked good in patches. So we know he's a good player, mm-hmm. and I think just that kind of style of player, he's given a... I think, well, he's not really been given a chance at Rangers at all, but I think he'd be much more trying to adhere to a system and a role within that Rangers team if he's coming into that midfield, because of the designated roles they have in that midfield. I think at Hibs he's given a slightly more free role, and I think it's the kind of thing that he flourishes in, which is what we saw at Shrewsbury as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great because it's direct and he can take on players, and the finish was magnificent in that game as well.
Are we starting to feel the impact of Jack Ross? When he first came in, I don't think we did. But now I think when he took over the club, it had been 12 points in 12 games. But now they're looking good for top six, really, JJ. Maybe even higher.
I think last week, didn't we say that we can't really see what impact Jack Ross has had? Yeah. He's had a win, something. We're like, oh, yeah, we can see the impact. Like, it just takes time.
This is only based on the fact that they're beating a side that is also challenging for a top six league.
I bet all these teams are much of the same, aren't they? Like, Killy, Hibs, are all like, they're all going to finish somewhere between fourth and eighth. They can all beat each other. One team has to win each week, one team has to lose, or they draw. And like, Hibs here, so he's changed the system, right? I like the way Jack Ross speaks. There's a few good interviews with him and videos, and that the Coach's Voice is a good website, and they've got a video really with Jack Ross in it, and he takes apart one of the games. I can't remember, I think it was a Sunderland game he took apart, maybe. Anyway, I like the way he talks. I like the way he wants his teams to play. You need the players to do it. You need coaching time. You need coaches who can help you do it in the training ground. And they play all right. Like, they've got... I mean, they played in Kilmarnock here, so they switched to a back three because that is how you win against a back two. And then you've got Slivka as your muscle in midfield, Docherty and Allen to go and do some attacking stuff. And you've got width and pace from Newell and Boyle. Like, it just works very well. And then Christian Doidge is managing the score, and he's got some confidence. There's a lot of players that rely on confidence are better when they have confidence. And now they started to win and score. Lo and behold, these players are a lot better than they suddenly were. And you think at the start of the season, no wonder they weren't very good. You had people like Josh Vela in the middle of the pitch. Mm-hmm. Like we said, just from watching a little bit of him, you could tell he wasn't really going to set Easter Road on fire.
Sure.
What are you going to say about Jack Ross? Like, you can see, I think you can kind of judge a manager at the end of the season over what he's achieved and what his final statistics are and things like that. Mm-hmm. But you can see that he's changing the system and getting the balance right, and he's brought some players in. A lot of them were players that were there last year. So is that really Jack Ross, or is that just people going, oh, we should have kept them?
Yeah.
I think that's the key thing. It's what you're saying there is balance, because I think they've got that balance going through the team now really well. We spoke an awful lot under Heckenbottom at the start of the season that they lost so many... Or drew so many games. I think that was the problem from winning positions.
That's right,
they just lost these. It was kamikaze defending stuff like that. Weirdly, the same kind of stuff you're seeing across the city at Hearts. But they're a lot more solid now. But that I think is the marked difference. Jack Ross has been in charge of 15 league games now for Hibs. Of those 15, they've won 7, drawn 3, and lost 5. So that's 24 points from 45. But a win average of 46.7, If you compare that to the 12 games they played without him as manager in the league so far this season, their win average was only 16.7. Mm. So it shows you the difference in hanging on for games, making sure that you see games over the line, that turning those draws into victories has seen them rocket up the table. And it was almost like it was small and simple changes.
Yeah.
But that's what you expected of him. He's clever and knows how to do that. But it's all about the balance. That's the important
thing.
That's
it. And his changes are made to try and gain control of the match and get that winning goal, whereas a lot of people say, like, we need a plan B, which means put on the tallest man that you have. And that's just revert to type and you just launch it. But Jack Ross has his... Why do you keep saying Jack Ross? This is Ross.
It's always Jack Ross.
But you just have to... He just keeps the ball on the deck and they play nice football.
It's funny because we do always say Jack Ross. He has to be first and second name terms. But his real name is John James Ross. Which is always baffling.
We've been through this before, though, didn't I?
We have. But anyway, what about Kilmarnock? And we probably knew that Kilmarnock were going to be fairly inconsistent under Alex Dyer because he has taken over halfway through the season. But they did have a pretty amazing victory over Rangers last week. Alex Dyer said post-match on Wednesday, "I'm just happy that we showed what we can do after showing Rangers too much respect in the first half. If someone says, that reminds me of a Steve Clark team, I'll take that all day. I learned so much from the gaffer." Do we think Alex Dyer is going to be a pretty good manager?
Well, he could learn from Steve Clark, who is a very good manager.
Very good manager.
I can't remember who is it. Is it David Priest who said that maybe he's going to be a really good coach? He's really highly regarded. Mm-hmm. Obviously a very good training ground coach. And Steve Clark, people often speak of Steve Clark's training and say it's great. It's always new. He does different things than that. So I don't know that applies to being an actual manager or something. I mean, if you have someone who's the best at organising the spreadsheets team in your office, that's the thing, right? That doesn't necessarily mean they can lead the whole office and take you to a glorious new...
Yeah, you have to have
business park.
You have to have leadership qualities.
Yeah, I think the players trust him. I think they admire him, and that's really, really useful. But that doesn't mean that you don't have to be a tactical genius. It's got to be, often need more, like your man management, how you get players inspired, how you read the game, how you know when to change little bits and pieces. Killy, like, I think at the start of the season, I'm pretty sure if we went back, I'm pretty sure I said Killy would be sixth or seventh. At the start of the season,
you wrote an article at the start of the season after I think 11 games.
I didn't predict
Angelo,
sixth or seventh,
LSU, and I think you did in your article.
Well, there you go.
But it's not over yet. But anyway, that's Edinburgh dealt with. So up next, we dissect Rangers and Celtic.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
After ruining what hope Rangers might have had on the title midweek, the Glasgow side were able to save some face thanks to Scott Arfield's winner over high-flying Livingston. They've had to rely on Arfield for goals in recent games. That's his third in as many now. So, Finn, what has happened to Rangers in your eyes?
They've kind of dropped off a cliff spectacularly since the winter break. James Tavernier was saying in the press this week that he was kind of at a loss to describe what's happened. I think it's probably a mixture of different things. I think the break just came at the wrong time for Rangers. I'd say, by and large, between August and the end of December, Rangers were pretty much the best team in the country in terms of the football they were playing. They were 2 points behind Celtic, but had a game in hand at that point as well. And I think before the Livingston game, Rangers had dropped as many points in the five games before Livingston as they had done in the 20 mm-hmm. league matches before that. So it just shows you the drop-off. I think injuries have been a factor. The fact that Tavernier, Morelos, Defoe, Jack and Barisic have all been missing at various points. And especially the fullbacks, because they're so crucial to Rangers' shape and the way that they play. So if Tavernier's out, and it's only Barisic that's playing. Teams just double up on the left-hand side, Rangers' left-hand side. Barisic has been out the last couple of games. Actually, Halliday's deputised okay, but he's not Barisic. Mm-hmm. So they just double up on Tavernier on the other side. Jack's been carrying an injury since, I think, the start of December. Just hasn't looked the same because he was in unbelievable form for the first 4 or 5 months of the season. The suspension of Morelos, I think, hasn't helped. And then there's, you know, been a lot of stuff in his personal life that's been going on in the media. I don't think that will have helped at all. It's kind of compounded, I think, by the fact that Gerrard, at times, you just need to remember he's still a very young manager. And it's interesting, just harking back to the whole Greg Doherty thing. It's, if you were a Rangers fan, you must be frustrated looking at somebody who's playing really well in the last couple of games for Hibs in centre mid, and looking at Rangers centre mid, which has looked so toothless recently, even though it's got Steve Davis in there, mm-hmm. Ryan Jack and Aribo and Arfield. Arfield's the weird one because he's kind of, it's almost like he started his season now because he played all through the summer with Canada, came back absolutely wrecked and a shadow of the former, shadow of the player that was there in his first season at Rangers. But he's weirdly almost had the winter break as his pre-season. So it's no wonder that he's come back and he's scored, I think it's what, 4 goals in his last 3 games or something like that. So, but Gerrard, I just think, is a little bit naive sometimes. I think the game against Kilmarnock, they were 1-0 up, not playing well. You need to know how to use your squad to see out games. I think that's the kind of game Davis was on the bench. Bring him on, play the quarterback role, take the sting out of the game. Don't let Kilmarnock get a foothold back into it because they were dominating the midfield in that mm-hmm. second half. And against Livingston as well, it was interesting because the change came and Gerrard isn't great at making early changes, but he did make one against Livingston, which was just after halftime. I think he gave Kent 10 minutes. He'd been really poor. He's just out of form. He's a young kid. He'll go in and out of form. And give him 10 minutes at the start, hooked him off and brought Camberi on, who I thought was brilliant, actually playing wide of the three. So he played in Kent's position, wide of the three on the left, up front. And Hadji dropped slightly deeper. And because Hadji is a two-footed player who's always looking to progress the play, that's when he started making chances. And it was his through ball for Arfield that was the breakthrough. And with a team that's not playing well, that is what you need. So I think it's a combination of things, but they need to figure out how to turn it around quickly. Otherwise, the league will go very, very quickly.
Well, there seems to be a nerviness to Rangers now, and it's getting over that hurdle as well, because that's just something that they've created themselves. But Gerrard has been heavily critical of refereeing, and he said, and is he right, really, to say that officiating needs to step up? We've not spoken about refs that much this season, JJ.
So we're bored of it. It's the same every week. At some point, you just accept that it's you're rolling dice, you're just throwing.
But I mean, there was two moments in this game that I'm sure probably everyone has seen, when Morelos' goal was chopped for offside, it was the same for Florian Camberi. Are we in agreement that they were both offside?
From what I've seen, I would say Morelos was quite clearly onside. I think he was probably off marginally, but mm-hmm. I think he was off, so I think they got that one right. The other decision, I think, there were two decisions. There was a red card that didn't happen, that should have been a red card for, I think it was a tackle on Connor Goldson, which was horrendous let go, but that happens every week. And there was also, my favourite one was the handball a corner kick that came in. It hit off the guy's hand so clearly. And I think Steven Gerrard said in the post-match that the ref had said to Connor Goldson, "I can't give that because of the conditions." So the ref didn't give a penalty because he felt it was unfair that the wind had blown the ball into this player's hand.
Ewan Anderson was the referee.
Yeah.
It's clearly a penalty.
It's 100% clearly a penalty. I mean, these are the moments where it just takes the pressure off. When decisions go wrong, okay, some of them were correct, but those ones that need to be right and they don't go right just adds another level of pressure when you're already nervous.
I think Rangers they might have a case to feel slightly grieved as well, because looking back to the League Cup final, there were some decisions that went against them quite spectacularly that day. And also in the midweek game at Kilmarnock, Morelos was... had a headed goal that was given, was disallowed because it was adjudged to have fouled Finlay in the build up to it, pushed him, which I think was incredibly soft. So, again, this should all be underlined and caveated with the fact that I think Rangers should be performing miles above where they are, and they should be seeing off teams comfortably. But in a title race, you will go through periods where you're not playing well, and that's the kind of little things that you need to go your way. And instead of coming away from Rugby Park with no points, they should have come away with at least one.
Well, Livingston could argue that they should have came away with at least a point because, you know, Eamon Souda forced the best out of Alan McGregor and we had Lyndon Dykes smashing the post. It was lovely technique, but just couldn't find the back of the net. But a more important point to note is Scott Pittman's perfectly slide tackling of Gary Holt. Have you seen that?
It was a great tackle.
It absolutely scythes him down spectacularly.
Holt also looks raging after he's done it.
He's the type of manager I don't think I'd like to piss off.
No, definitely not.
I can see Gary Holt being at a bigger club next season, yeah.
When you say bigger club, what are we, in Scotland or even in England?
Hearts are such a disaster that they could quite conceivably get rid and put him in there.
What about Kilmarnock, former player?
Is it bigger than Livy? He's got Livy going really well just now. I mean, it's bigger gate, isn't it? But maybe.
I'd say the same thing actually about Lyndon Dykes. I've been so impressed with him in large parts of the season. Is he capped by Australia?
He's not capped, but from Australia.
I would give him a shot in the Scotland squad.
He's said because his parents are from Dumfries, which is where I'm from. but oddly, I think the level of football was actually suiting him because I do think it's different from the Scottish Championship where he was with Queen of the South. And he was more of a frustrating footballer for Queens. But he was also the perfect foil for Stephen Dobie. But I think the level has actually helped him because he's getting a bit more room, getting a bit more space. And he can be really frustrating to defend against because he's tall, he's a bit lanky, but he's also quick. And as we saw against Rangers, he has a decent shot on him. He just, I think, delays his decision-making a bit too long for me that frustrates. But yeah. I don't see why we couldn't give him a shot at Scotland.
He's still only 24 as well, which I think is the same age as Lauren Shankland. And obviously Shankland's a poacher. Well, I mean, that's a bit unfair. He's a very good natural finisher. I think Lyndon Dykes is more a foil to that as well.
Exactly.
But I don't see why there's any reason that he shouldn't have at least be part of the squad.
I'm not having Lyndon Dykes as Scotland international striker.
Why not?
Right, so we end up playing Norway in the qualifications, right? They've got Erling Haaland, who's like a generational talent, one of the best young strikers I think I've... And I'm not...
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
One of the best young strikers. I'm so excited watching the player. He's got everything. And then we're going to put Lyndon Dykes up front.
Well, we could put him in defence. He's tall enough.
Oh, geez. I mean...
You have to work with what you've got. And if they've got Haaland, you know, we've got Scott McKenna at centre-back, so that's fine.
There you go. Look, Aberdeen scoring issues appear to be a thing of the past, but Celtic will be Celtic, and they beat Aberdeen to notch up their ninth in a row thanks to Christopher Ayer's winner.
Oh, look at Christopher Ayer! There it is! There's the Celtic goal! They might just win this game!
But, JJ, Aberdeen looked good in this game. They've really managed to turn their season around this week. Now in third position, and Sam Cosgrove was on the bench because Curtis Main has been performing pretty well, hasn't he?
Yes, there's been a change in the system and it's worked very, very well. There's a few things actually, not just the system that has changed with Aberdeen. So he's gone for a back three, and Funso Ojo is back playing and has been really good. He's playing like a six. And you've got, against Hamilton, you had McGeoch and Ferguson in the midfield. And against Celtic, it was McGinn playing up front with Main and Ojo and Ferguson playing behind him like a 3-2 thingy.
3-2 thingy.
I'm getting confused with myself. Basically, so they've been playing the back three, Constantine, McKenna and Taylor, and it's really working very well. You've got Kennedy giving you width. You've got McGinn playing through the centre with a striker. Main is in for Cosgrove, who has maybe suffered a bit of confidence drop, and he's definitely a confidence player. So many are, but Main's been magic. He's like playing like Vardy, like Jamie Vardy at Leicester, running and pressing the ball really high up the pitch. He's the trigger for the pressing. Mm-hmm. So when he goes, and he goes every single time, other people follow. It looks like contagious. You know, get these players that people just copy them.
Yeah.
So he's been doing that, and it's not that he's. And also, I think I described him as a human wardrobe earlier on. Like he's big lad, right? But he's got really clever little touch. He sees things happening in tight spaces. He's much better in these closed environments than I thought he was going to be. He looks like someone you lump the ball to, but he's actually a lot smarter than smarter than he looks. It's so harsh. God, I'm a lot stupider than I look. And he's just been genuinely very good. And he's got a goal against Hamilton. He scored the first one. Lovely little finish. And against Celtic, he did so much off the ball. And a lot of people moan, like when Aberdeen played Celtic, one of the three centre-backs that Lennon will play, even if it's a two, one of them will just run through on a post all the way through. But Mayne doesn't let that happen. He just works harder than Cosgrove, who stays largely static to act as the point of reference for passes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's happened with it is rather than just pumping it 80 yards every time the defenders get the ball, like even Ash Taylor stopped doing it. Short passes, little triangles everywhere, diamonds being made, and they're getting numbers forward. Against Hamilton, we saw it a lot, that they were getting, like Sheffield United. I think maybe McInnes has been watching Sheffield United and copying this. Because you see there's different passages of play where normally you'd give the ball to McGinn out wide or Kennedy out wide and they're 1v1 and that's it. You've got to take on the fullback. It's really hard to beat a fullback, even if you're a better player. It's very hard. Defender always has an advantage here. They hook a ball into the box, clears, move, breaks down. But now, if you pause the game at any certain attacking point, you'll see Aberdeen have at times four players in the same wide space. That doesn't happen before now, and it's really working. Just getting like Constantine joining the attack, having midfielders around it means they're able to keep the ball higher up the pitch, and it meant that they were more in control of the game against Celtic than they have been in any recent ones.
But they still had to rely on set pieces to look dangerous, if you know what I mean. It was still a lot of crosses
against who?
Into the box against Celtic.
Aye, but Celtic, they haven't lost a game in like 4 years.
Yeah, well, that's all fair and well, but I mean, Celtic did do what they normally do.
Yeah, but in context, like, no one beat Celtic. Livy have beaten them when he had 10 men. No one beat Celtic.
Actually, the stats on this one were absolutely incredible. There were some floating around on Twitter from Agent Scotland. So this was Neil Lennon's 50th win in 61 games since he returned to Celtic.
Mental.
And so that win rate is 82.2%. And so that makes him actually the fastest manager in Celtic's history to get to 50 wins, faster than Rodgers, who was 64, O'Neill, who was 63, and even Steen, who was 71. And also Celtic haven't dropped a single point from a winning position in the league so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are staggering, and it just seems to kind of remind us of last season when Celtic came back from the winter break and they just came and steamrolled the rest of the season.
Like, I know it's impressive. Crazy. It's impressive they've done this. But
they should be doing it, right?
Yeah.
That's where you're going to.
Exactly. And it's, and people, because of my soft spot for Aberdeen, people think it's just like sour grapes, whatever. It's not. The whole league, as it is across Europe, is broken. Like, you have leagues across it. I mean, PSG will never not win that league. That one Monaco win, one of a kind, won't happen again. The problem with Scottish football at the moment is that this is it kind of forever. It's going to be Celtic. Rangers might get a couple in, but the difference, I mean, they are in a different world financially to Rangers even with the money that Rangers are pumping into it. And Rangers have to get Champions League football soon because the amount of money they're putting in, or they have to do well in the Europa League, because there's no way that's sustainable. The wages and the money they're spending, it's just not. So but you can't really bridge that gap. To challenge Aberdeen, someone had said to me on Twitter, yeah, but like Aberdeen have lost in 8 games or they haven't beaten or drawn with Celtic in 8 games. Like, yeah, but I would say, honestly, to get one decent result against Celtic, like a 0-0 would be, in one occasion in 10 games would be a real achievement. And that's the same for any team in the league.
But look, JJ, we've got exciting news because we are going to change Scottish football next month, aren't we?
Is that because we're going to do a thing?
Yeah, we're going to do a thing.
Is it next month?
It's next month, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to Glasgow, then Aberdeen, and we've got a special guest to announce, don't we, JJ?
Oh, yes, I'm very excited about this. So it's not only the wonderful Andrew Slavin and myself going to these live podcast shows we're doing, but ex-Scotland manager Gordon Strachan.
Hell yeah.
He's going to teach us a thing or two.
Yeah, I think he'll teach us a lot, to be fair. How to talk about football, for one. But yeah, look, you guys can be there if you want. If you don't,
please come. Ignore him. Please come. I think tickets are around about £14-15, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But you need to head over to the totallyfootballshow.com/events and you'll find out all the details.
We've got a whole show. It's all going to be good fun.
And Gordon Strachan. JJ, you're looking very smooth in the face. How has this happened?
Well, Andrew, I've been using Harry's because it's all about a smooth, close shave.
That sounds good. And hey, do you know what also sounds good about Harry's?
Please tell me.
They're a company that supports the football community. They're backing football's other guys, the five-a-side teams and the Sunday league squads that bring the bibs, lay down the cones and tape the goalposts every Sunday, all for the love of the game. And Harry's will be celebrating grassroots football with a competition at the start of March. Think changing room makeovers, new kits,
goalposts and other much needed things to revitalise the ground of local teams. To find out more about their competition or to get started shaving with Harry's, head to harrys.com/Scottish. For just £3.95, you'll receive a trial set worth £11.50, which includes a razor, a 5-blade razor cartridge, foaming shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Go to harrys.com/Scottish right now. That's harrys.com/Scottish, and you too could be as smooth as JJ Boole. Right, there's just one more match to go, and it's Ross County 1, St Johnstone 1. It was Billy Mackay's 94th minute equaliser that salvaged Ross County a point against St Johnstone, leaving both sides 9th and 8th in the table, respectively.
It's Billy Mackay!
Have you got a song about Billy Mackay?
No, it's the ICT song, cup final song.
Oh, yeah!
ICT!
That's so good.
You have brought shame to your family.
I'm going to listen to that tonight. For St Johnstone Finn, this was a real opportunity missed. And a kick in the teeth, really, because they were all over them. They could have overtaken Kilmarnock in the table and level on points with Hibs as well. So how scared of Tommy Wright would you be after letting in a late equaliser?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been great to be Xander Clark, who didn't really have a save to make?
No, and Xander Clark also didn't have a very good game midweek either. He had the... it was a long-range effort that Long scored against him. It was kind of, he fumbled, he was in the wrong position, hit off the post, and he could have saved it, but he kind of scrambled back in. Yeah, he didn't have a great game. I couldn't believe St Johnstone didn't win it. They were actually playing some unbelievably good stuff, especially in the first half. Like, the goal was brilliant, but there was some really lovely passing triangles, attacking moves. I think they'll be gutted that they didn't take all 3 points. But fair play to Ross County. Like, Ross County have done this time and time again this season. Mm. The amount of last-minute goals or goals in the last 10 minutes that they've scored is, you know, testament to where they are in the table, because they're fighting tooth and nail to stay up.
The good thing for St Johnstone, though, is that Stevie May looks like he's kind of back to the Stevie May we remember from ages ago.
Get him in the Scotland squad.
Four goals, 4 goals in 8 games, and you're only annoyed because he never did it for Aberdeen.
He's not.
That was a good finish, though.
I think the keeper should have saved it.
Really?
Yeah. I think he hits it low. It's not really good. It's a decent enough finish. Like, it's fine. But as I was saying, for all your passing triangles, the goal is still the boy launching it towards the space station, and it lands, and they get the second ball and come away with it. I'm glad to be scoring goals, but he's not.
I'm not suggesting he's, you know, going to be international level. I'm not
Look,
saying that.
Before
at all.
We started recording, you told me you want Lyndon Dykes and Stevie May up front for Scotland.
I did not. That is a lie. That is a barefaced lie, because he shaves.
Well, anyway, Ross County are exactly as good as they are. So, and if you want to look at expected points and goals, they're pretty much exactly where they are. St Johnstone are a little bit under. They are just fine.
Well, sadly for Motherwell and St Mirren, their match was called off. But the good news is you get to see them face each other on Tuesday instead in their Scottish Cup replay. So it's not all lost, unless the weather means it's postponed, in which case you won't get to watch it. God damn the weather. Why do we have a winter break?
Why do we have weather?
What is it for? Absolutely nothing. Anyway, speaking of the future, it's time for us to have a wee chat with our good pal, Paddy Power. Lee, what are the chances that Rangers can actually turn this 10-point gap around in their favour and win the Scottish title?
Oh, it was so sweet while it lasted, wasn't it? But what was briefly Europe's greatest title chase-ish is now just another foregone conclusion. Celtic 1-14 to win the Scottish Premiership, with Rangers a distant 7-1. There's another domestic competition, of course, both teams head the betting for, but again, the Hoops are favourites to win the Scottish Cup at 6-5.
Coming up this week, though, we've got European football again as Celtic face Copenhagen and Rangers take on Sporting Braga. What are the chances of them getting both wins?
Really interested to see how Rangers in particular approach their match. They're narrow favourites to beat Sporting Braga at home, 11-10 to win at Ibrox, and even narrower favourites to qualify for the next round. Celtic, meanwhile, are a similar price to win their first leg, despite being away from home at 13-10 and a 2-5 to go through. So that means, put them together, you can get just under 4-1 on the Old Firm, both winning their first legs, or around 1.66-1, very specific, that both go through.
And now that Aberdeen have found their scoring boots again, I reckon they will pump Kilmarnock 3-0 in the Scottish Cup replay. What can I get on that? And weather permitting, what about Motherwell versus St Mirren?
I love your decisiveness, because it seems our traders could do a bit of that. They're struggling to separate Killie and Aberdeen, let alone by three unanswered goals. The Dons we make 6-4 favourites to win the replay, which is almost the exact same price as their hosts. Kilmarnock are 13-8. As for your 3-0 win for Aberdeen, it's 25-1. Weather permitting, which is a big question mark, of course, Motherwell are 10-11 to beat St Mirren. The visitors are 11-4. The draw and the carnage that would bring, more so than any storm, is 23-10.
Now, it's not all about the men, because women play football too, and Scottish women make World Cups, so they're definitely better. And the great news is we're speaking with the captain, Utah Royals defender and massive Aberdeen fan. Yes, there's more than one JJ. It's Rachel Corsi. Rachel, does Storm Dennis make you glad to spend most of your time in Utah?
I mean, I would like to say yes, but I think at the moment there's about 5 foot of snow in Utah, so I'm quite glad to be here at the moment. But yeah, the sunshine in summer is probably worth me going back.
How has your time been over there so far?
Yeah, it's been really good. I think it was a brave decision to go in the first instance, and then I've been fortunate. I've been in two really different, but I think really cool places. I spent 3 years in Seattle, which, yeah, I properly fell in love with the city, and it's the one place I tell everyone that they have to try and visit. And then obviously I've been in Salt Lake City for the last 2 years, and that's a contrast to Seattle, but it's one I've really, really enjoyed. And especially the football side of things, I think in the last 18 months, I've really, really enjoyed sort of my surroundings and environment and the club. So yeah, it's been great.
Can I ask you about the World Cup?
Sure.
Amazing. The Argentina game, the final one, was one of the most angry times I think I've ever been watching football.
And me.
It was, I mean, to watch it was, I'm sure you've heard of this before from everyone else, but I'm not going to ask you, like, how did you feel or anything like that, but is it taken, I mean, what did it take to get over that?
It's actually interesting you just asked that, because I had a meeting today with Shelley Kerr, the national team manager, and that actually came up, and I actually don't think many of us have probably even truthfully dealt with it. I think it was a blessing in a way that we immediately had qualifiers for the Euros that were about 4 to 5 weeks later. Maybe 6 weeks, but very, very quickly afterwards.
Yeah.
I also was in the middle of my US season, so I virtually jumped on a plane, flew straight back to the US, and was back in club football. And I think in a way that was good at the time, because it didn't allow you to feel the full, probably emotional, overwhelming feelings that probably were there. But at the same time, I'm a little bit nervous that at one point in time they're just going to all come to a head. And I think it's just one of these things in life and in sport where you go through disappointments. And I mean, there's no real way to kind of explain it. It was unique.
I hope it was horrible.
yeah.
Is it the kind of thing, do you think, just would bring the it sounds kind of stupid, is it the kind of thing that can bring the players together, that could maybe spur on something, because the performances were so good, is the thing, that it was just so unlucky that was to happen. You must feel that there's a real group of players there that can do something. I'm not saying that you should be winning any trophies or anything like that, but certainly getting further. Like it's a good team, right?
Yeah, I think, I don't know that necessarily brought us closer. I think we have a really great group who are actually really close, and that's actually even unique in a club environment to have that. An international level, I think, is even more rare. But I think we all have a lot of self-belief. We have some great players at the moment. Like, it's one of these sort of spells where, you know, the youngsters that were coming through have all matured at a time where there's sort of 4 or 5 players who you can, you know, one game. It's Caroline Weir who, you know, does something spectacular, and then you've got Erin Cuthbert, Kim Little, Claire Emsley. There's so many who individually can change a game, and they're all sort of coming to their prime all at once. So I think that's really exciting, and I think it that is something that motivates us and keeps us encouraged and keeps us driving forward. And I know that we're so desperate to qualify again for the Euros this time round, and we have a favourable group, and we believe that we can get through that. And ultimately, yeah, the pressure now has changed and the mindsets have shifted, whereby we do understand that if we do get to the Euros, by not progressing would be seen as a disappointment because we are so talented. And so, yeah, that's really encouraging.
What do you feel about the kind of the potential in the future of women's football in Scotland? Because a lot of the Rangers and Celtic are obviously making huge strides in trying to make their women's teams turn professional. You know, you yourself and a lot of the players that you just mentioned there, like Kim Little, Erin Cuthbert and everything, if you get to a certain level, it's almost like Scotland's a glass ceiling. You have to move abroad if you want to be professional and kind of get to the highest point that you can. Do you think that the Scottish game's going in the right way, that, you know, young players coming through in Scotland could stay there and have a good long international career from playing for teams like Glasgow, Hibs, Rangers, Celtic and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I hope so. And I think you like to kind of have that target. I think there's some elements of, you know, I think Celtic and Rangers announcing they're going professional, I think I'm intrigued to see how that kind of translates and how it quite looks. And, you know, professional has a lot of different meanings, I think. And so it'll be interesting kind of what parameters they put in place to promote their programme. I think we need that to happen. I think we'll always also fall into the category similar to the men's football, whereby England and abroad may always be appealing. But I think one of the major things is by having a professional league in Scotland is that it does enable youngsters and, you know, little girls and boys to dream of going on and playing sport professionally. I mean, I obviously grew up just thinking that was, I didn't even think about it really, but I loved football, and so I just watched men's football, and that was great, and I've still got to where I've got to. But I think it's really, it'll be helpful and encouraging, and I think we'll have more interest in the sport, and if you have more interest, you have more people playing, you have more chance of more quality and so forth. I think that will hopefully open a lot of doors and hopefully allow so many players coming through in the next 5, 10, 20 years to go on and achieve some great things that are far beyond what we've achieved as current professionals. And I think that's something that whilst we enjoy our own career, we still also feel a huge responsibility and understanding that we're part of a legacy and we're part of an important period of time where we can really accelerate the growth.
Well, Glasgow City are obviously achieving great things because they're in the Champions League quarterfinal, aren't they? But we should talk about the national team because, like you mentioned, some key games coming up in the Euro 21 qualifiers and playing at home against Portugal in April and Finland in September at Easter Road and Albania in June at Tynecastle. And the last time you guys played at Easter Road, there were 6,000, over 6,000, I think. And the aim now is to top that. So how can we get behind the team and what do people need to do to get there and support Scotland?
I mean, turn up.
That's the answer, folks.
You've done a great job plugging it. I loved it.
Thank you very much.
No, I think the biggest thing is just having it out there in the media. And I know that there was conversations at the end of last year because whilst obviously 6,000 was a record for a home qualifier, I think we're actually really disappointed because I think there were some issues with the ticketing at that point in time. And I think we probably sold ourselves short because I think the interest in the game probably was far higher than that, especially off the back of a World Cup. So we've set ourselves a new target. And I think the players themselves do a really good job of trying to market the game. And the association has a plan in place to try and maximise that because I think we can push boundaries. And, you know, you see England always seeming to be the first and setting the records and all these things. And there's no reason why we can't push things and look to try and sell out stadiums because, I mean, as you say, you saw from the World Cup, there's just so many people interested, so many people watched. And I think now as well, I think so many of the fans realise like they actually do have a huge impact on us and the momentum they give us actually helps us to continue that success. So, you know, we're all in it together and I think hopefully we'll continue on an upward trajectory with getting fans in the gates and coming to watch.
And you win. That's the thing. It's a, it's great fun to watch. Like, it's so nice being able to support a team. You're like, yes!
I know. It is genuinely really good.
Like, Albania coming up, should absolutely pump them, right? I know you're not going to say that on air. Fine, we'll ask him.
It's a game that we ultimately have to win, so yeah.
Well, if you're in Aberdeen at the end of March, you know we're doing a live show. Are you available?
Stop plugging the show till we talk.
I've already plugged the show, but I'm now plugging it to you know it'd be great to have you.
I would love to be there, but I am going to be in the US at the end of March.
God damn it, Rachel.
Sorry. I know, it ruins everything.
Unbelievable. Well, listen, best of luck with everything that's coming up. All the best for the future. Great. Rachel, and thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
Rachel Corsi, Scotland captain. Right, before we end the show, Europa League is back. European football is back. And how confident are we that Celtic can beat Copenhagen in Copenhagen? JJ, do you know much about Copenhagen? Can I say Copenhagen one more time?
I don't know much about Copenhagen just now, no. So,
well, I can tell you, they are pretty much excellent at home. I think they've got the best home record in Denmark.
Are they the Celtic of Denmark?
But they have just been on a two-month winter break. They have a winter break too, but they have it for 2 months. Mm. So I don't know how they might be feeling towards this, because I think they've got quite a lot of injuries. They lost on Saturday to a team that's fighting relegation as well. So I'm kind of thinking Celtic are in a good place to try and get a win away from home, because they've been better away from home in Europe under Neil Lennon. Obviously, the Lazio win sticks in my mind.
I think those are kind of games where it's backs to the wall. I think in terms of what the teams are, I think Celtic and Copenhagen are much more level in terms of their abilities and stuff like that. I don't necessarily know if they'll win in Denmark, but I would fancy them over the two legs. I think they would have too much for Copenhagen once they get them back to Celtic Park.
Yeah, I think I've got it written down, actually. Kilmarnock. Copenhagen have only got one defeat all season. I think that's at home, and that was Malmo in the Europa League. But what about Rangers over Sporting Braga? Because Braga have been excellent in recent weeks, haven't they?
Yeah, in their last seven games, they've beaten Porto twice, Sporting twice, and they just, at the weekend, won at Benfica. That's the first time in 65 years and 63 attempts they've won at the Stadio de Luz. And it means they're unbeaten in the last 10 games. So absolutely perfect to be meeting a Rangers team that can't string more than three passes together.
I think it's cliche, but Portuguese teams are all actually really very good. Like, you can see they're very good in international football as well. Yeah. And Braga's team is a lot of Portuguese homegrown players and a lot of Brazilians as well.
Well, this is, I think they held, they beat Wolves as well and drew 3-3 Wolves, which I think was an amazing game. But I think even their coach is pretty comfortable at the moment, because he's won 8 of his 9 games as Braga head coach, and he says his side feel unstoppable ahead of facing Rangers in the Europa League following their 1-0 win away to Benfica. And like you said,
Ricardo Horta was their best player.
Yeah, what is he like?
He's a left winger, and he likes to dribble and do attacking things.
Yeah, play football basically.
I've only seen highlights of him, so I couldn't give you in depth. I mean, actually, I know what I'll do. I'll Google. I've got him on FIFA 20. I believe he is a 79 rated player.
Well, there you go.
So there you go.
Know, the thing is, Rangers have beaten Porto themselves.
I think that's something that goes into it.
And exactly.
The other thing I think that weirdly might help Rangers going into this is actually it's a break from the pressure of the league. I think they've been shown to be quite well suited to playing against European opposition. I think, weirdly as well, the other thing that might go for them, because the game's at Ibrox, the pitch looks like a paddy field at the moment. I think that might go in their favour against Braga too.
I think they play nice football in Europe, Rangers.
I think they do.
Weirdly, it sounds stupid, but they're better suited to play in Europe than they are against teams in the Premiership just now.
I agree. And I just think the distraction of it, weirdly, I think could be a good thing. And their record at home in Europe is pretty impressive as well. Braga be no mugs. Again, just looking over for the two legs, I could see Rangers beating Braga, but I would be very surprised if they got through over two legs.
Do you know what my job is on Thursday? I am actually watching every single game on Thursday. Wow. That, as part of my job, I have to be across all of those games.
Wow.
There you go. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I do have some help, but it's going to be tough. But as our time in the studio reaches the end, it's time to say goodbye. And thank you to Finn. Thank you to JJ for arriving on time.
I think I should have some music here, like goodbye long.
I don't know. I'm going to have given this a solemn
fair
goodbye.
Long. Yeah. So long.
I don't know.
Oh, God.
But anyway, we've got Little Kicks, so that's even better than what you're suggesting.
Yes.
So next week, we'll have more football talk, hopefully without any storms to discuss. But listeners, we'll see you next Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Join Ruby Walsh, Paddy Power, Tom Nugent and a whole host of great guests each week on Paddy Power's racing podcast, From the Horse's Mouth. From the Horse's Mouth. From the mouth of a horse. From the mule's muzzle. From the pony's trap. From the cob's gob. You get the picture. From the Horse's Mouth. New episodes every Friday.
Muddy Knees Media.